You are listening to www.infinitesmile.org. Enjoy these Zen-inspired talks given by Michael McAllister, followed up by question and answer exchanges with groups of his students.
As we start practicing, one of the hardest things is bowing. Because that's right where our ego meets up with resistance. Right at that precise line where we have been taught our whole lives, I don't bow to anybody, or this is weird, or these are great, great defenses. And one of the things that was so helpful to me was when I had this nun approach me as I was beginning my practice. And she could have been the wicked old witch of the West. I mean, she was just caustic and had this real sour and dour look on her face all the time. And I remember she was kind of instructing us on the correct form and so forth, on how you place your hands fist width from the nose, level with the nose, the middle finger, and then we bow kind of a short, you know, it's like a nod and so forth. And I remember I was kind of thinking, oh, this is freaky, this is cultish, this is strange, gives me the creeps. And I know something, she must have sensed this in me, because she approached me afterwards and she said, you know what, one thing that really helped me was realizing that when I am bowing to another person, I'm bowing to what is holy in both of us. I'm bowing to myself. I'm not bowing to show subservience. I'm bowing to release all of my clinging. And I was like, oh, well, why didn't you say that? That would have made everything so much easier for me, because I was totally caught in this idea of what my conception of the bow meant. My conception, that possession, that my-ness is the contraction. And the contraction is actually contracting because it fears infinity. The radical chaos of the infinite is totally threatening to the thing that wants to appear separate. And the way it guards against that divine chaos, that white, hot, burning fire, the chaos of the infinity, is to guard. And it guards in any way it can. The best way it can do is through judgment. Ego's job is to judge. Ego's job is to defend. Ego's job is to be right. And as long as it can be right all the time, as long as it can totally kind of hold off, hold up the wall, hold the door, block the door from what wants to crash through. As long as ego can hold the door against what wants to naturally crash through, it's got a job. So with that in mind, I kind of wanted to just talk real briefly about how Buddhism and other traditions can help us along a path of expansion rather than contraction. And Buddhism is not the only show. There are all sorts of practices that can help us get there. But the one thing they all have in common is a stillness practice. A deep stillness where there isn't any asking for favors. There isn't any crying out. There is just stillness. And automatically what arises out of that stillness is an expansion. And from that expansion, there's a knowing with a capital K. It's not an egoic understanding. It's a knowing with a capital K that is informed by spirit. And that knowing, when put into action through our bodies, becomes compassion. So it's a real nice, elegant process. The stillness leads us into wisdom, which leads us into compassion, which supports our stillness, which supports our wisdom, which supports our compassion, which allows for the growth of stillness and the growth of wisdom. It becomes this divine spiral that opens just like a lotus. When we do that, when we bloom out of the mud, when we're able to bloom out of the mud, what we become is a ripple that turns into the wave that I've talked about, that actually crashes through this door that ego has been holding. Not only our ego, but everybody else's, collectively. So we allow for this utter destruction of what we've been clinging to. And this is scary. This is totally scary. This creates a rawness inside of us that we don't want to face. Ego does not want to face it because it means it's being yanked out of its position as the CEO of our awareness. So that really is, if you will, our problem. I don't like referring it to like that. I don't like referring to it like a problem, but that's in essence where we are. We are addicted to the idea that we are separate. And this separate nature that I am in here and everything else is out there leads us into a position of insecurity. And this insecurity always leads us into a position of fear, and then this fear leads us typically, our typical response, at least the one that's most accessible, is anger. It leads us right into anger. We can meet anything with rage, and it can be a high level of rage, or it can be a very low level of anxiety that manifests in the form of being overly, let's say, critical, overly judgmental. We can even take it internally. Instead of letting the anger go outside to the world, we can bring the anger within, and that looks like guilt or depression. All of this coming from the idea and the clinging to this idea and this identification with the idea that I am in here and everything else is out there. Yasutani Roshi's great quote. He said that the fundamental delusion is that I am in here and everything else is out there. Boy, if we can get through that, then what happens? Well, if we can see that as our problem, we can then look at, if you will, the expansion. The contraction is our problem. The expansion becomes, again, I hate to use the word, but it becomes the goal. And that takes several different forms, but it begins with our own awareness. It begins with our awareness of mind and our awareness of body. In mind, we deal with time and thought. And in body, we deal with feelings and emotions. And the stillness practice that we bring to that allows us to study time and thought and our relationship in seeing how those two things are not separate. Thought is born in time, therefore it is not separate from time. Time is what actually fuels thought. Thought either exists in the past or in the future. It either has happened before or it hasn't happened before. It's a fantasy. It's either a fantasy or it's a memory. We're either cooking in our minds, something that hasn't happened yet, we just keep cooking, as my teacher in Thailand used to say, or we have a series of old stories that keep rerunning themselves through our head. Can we let go of them? Because then that becomes our practice. a letting go, a conscious letting go. And in that conscious letting go, just like a hand opens when it lets go, the lotus, metaphorically, opens within our own hearts and in our minds. We become an opening. And that's when divinity shines through us. That's when we've allowed the clear and radiant light of knowing, with the capital K, to infuse our activity. That's when we become the ripple that then has the capacity to turn into a wave that then crashes through our own defenses and our own doors of perception, allowing the radiant chaos in, allowing unpredictability in, allowing wonder in. And when we allow it in, what comes out is compassion. What comes out is presence. We've seen individuals who kind of just shake and rattle with a certain vibe. They have a certain presence about them. They're not always spiritual teachers, but they're just individuals who radiate, kind of. And those individuals, something's burning inside of them that's different than others. And what's burning is an openness. So then, the way we allow for this openness becomes our practice. Just sitting still consciously becomes our practice. And there are little things that we can do that I think are really important, just and really supportive of this expanse, of this opening. One thing you can try every single day, take one aspect of your life, just one, maybe it's driving, maybe it's doing stuff at the office, a particular task or chore at the office, a particular task or chore at home, and try to do it with your full mind. Try, in other words, to move your chair as you finish eating in silently. You cannot do that without being absolutely aware of what's going on. You cannot do anything silently without being totally aware of what you're doing. While you're driving, can you be totally aware of the relationship you are having with the other drivers on the freeway or in town? Can you allow for those who resist your moves to be okay? Can you allow for yourself as a driver to be okay? Can you do it with your full mind, your full awareness? Put the cell phone down and just drive. Can you play with your dog or walk your dog with your full mind? Can you just be with another person with your full attention? Maybe it's a partner. Maybe it's a son or a daughter. Maybe it's a neighbor. Can you be there fully expressed but quiet? I mean, these things are really, really valuable, because what they do is they allow us to move in the world from a place of deep awareness. We move in the world from stillness. The stillness orients our activity if we do it with our full mind. And so what we become is we become the practice of compassion. And what emanates is kindness. The byproduct of this practice is kindness, is helpfulness. And that's really why we're here. It's not about a personal agenda. It's also not about an impersonal agenda. It's about the personal agenda and the impersonal agenda meeting so that the agenda becomes totally inclusive. And we become open to the all. We then become expressions of the all in everything that we do. And when we're able to do that, we do it again. Did anything come up for any of you? Nice bow, by the way.
Thank you. You know, putting some space between, you know, your thoughts or ideas when you've conditioned yourself for most of your life to like try to think on your feet,
right,
and move a position along, particularly like at work. And if you've found anything that's helpful to put some space between what someone is saying to you and before you respond.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple situations at work today with some vendors that, I really felt like I was just talking to a wall. And yeah. I didn't do a very good job of, I just felt like I was just sort of pushing back.
Did they light you up real quick?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's usually, if you feel yourself lighting up, that's what's happening is usually they're tweaking that in you that is insecure, that in you that feels separate, right? That in you that feels fearful. God, I'm not going to get this done, you know? And so one of the simplest practices that you can do is as they do this, check in with your body, not with your thoughts, because you have a great mind, you're very fast, you're very quick, you know? And when what you really want to do in that space is slow down. Because the slowing down, especially if you check in with your body, creates space between you and the armor that you have, right? If a knight wears armor that's too tight, what happens is a dent happens, the dent is what kills him, right? The dent in the armor, because it pushes right against his body. So checking in with your body the minute you feel the fire of anger start to kindle, because it'll go, the conflagration happens at light speed in lots of cases, right? Checking in with your body, where are you feeling it? Is it here and here? Become a student, literally study your responses. And in doing that, usually you will have taken a breath. And then mom's old comment, count to 10 before you get angry, you know, can right. become, yeah. you know, it can become a great practice.
But what can remind you to do that, though? And sometimes there's just no space between
you're right.
what they're saying and your response.
If you ever fall off the wagon, Mark,
right.
get back on. Practice it again in another moment. You know, if you goof, you know, I mean, there's this great thing, and sometimes it can be really compassionate to apologize, you know? Even if the person, even if your perception is that person was wrong, you know, at a core level, you go, God, that person was really wrong. What a jerk, or whatever. chances are they're probably doing the best they can, and also there's something in you or in the relationship that intimidates, scares, or creates their own fire or their own defensiveness, starts building up the brick wall that you find yourself running, just butting up against. Basically, he wants or she wants to please you, and basically, you want to please them. However, this, the clash, okay, that is brought about by my defensiveness and your defensiveness, allows for a total misplacement of compassionate knowing. Understanding gets lost, and all we are two egos slamming heads. So it's that breath, it's that checking in with your body, where to study it. And what happens is you start to slow down. And in that slowing down, the wisdom can start informing what your next move is going to be. Because the next move is about not only helping yourself, but also helping the other person help you. And the interdependence and the temporary nature of the feeling give way to the infinity that's being expressed in that moment. And then you help the other person become a bodhisattva through your bodhisattva-ness. You know? And it's hard work. This is not easy. Especially, you know, in our training. And I say this is, you know, I'm with you. You know? When our training goes one way, man, we get stuff done. Check, 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 right? You know? This is not easy work. Time for one more question, if anybody, one more comment. Yes, sir.
You said something of your talk about when we start to, I think you said something to the effect of getting the ego out of the way or starting to break through these barriers that everybody else kind of like collectively gets on with it, mm-hmm. too. That was my understanding, the way you said it. It was almost like other people become enlightened with you. Mm-hmm. It's like the barriers start to break mm-hmm. down. I mean, I'm just wondering what's going on and my mind's trying to catch that.
Yeah. You mean what happens? How is it that anyone's enlightenment is everyone's enlightenment?
Right.
Yeah. Anyone's enlightenment occurs only through the meeting of stillness. And in the meeting of stillness, where this very body that you have, or I have, or any of us has, when this very body meets stillness, what happens is infinity shows itself within our interior landscape as well as without, on the outside of our interior landscape. We start recognizing what I've thrown at you, I've called the deep singularity of all things. We arise as nothing other than the deep singularity. We are, Kevin is, nothing other than awakened spaciousness. And the minute you see that you are nothing other than awakened spaciousness is the minute you see that I and everyone else is awakened spaciousness. They are enlightened too. You recognize that which is enlightened in all people. And that recognition allows for an incredible compassion to come flying through you, as them.
Like a barrier start breaking down.
When there's no barrier, there can't be fear.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So, here's to no barriers. See you guys.
Yeah.